Finding Sisterhood on the Road. Is the warehouse building boom over? And what's the cost of electrifying the nation's trucks? Pull up a chair and join us as the editors of DC Velocity discuss these stories, as well as news and supply chain trends, on this week's Logistics Matters podcast. Hi, I'm Dave Maloney. I'm the Group Editorial Director at DC Velocity. Welcome. Logistics Matters is sponsored by Aptian. Aptian is a global provider of mission-critical, industry-specific logistics and transportation management solutions. Aptian Proof of Delivery provides advanced transportation systems to world-leading brands, helping to transform final-mile delivery services, boost operational efficiencies, and drive business growth. Your delivery operation can be a powerful vehicle to deliver game-changing customer service. Visit Aptian.com and discover what's next now. As usual, our DC Velocity senior editors, Ben Ames and Victoria Kickham, will be along to provide their insights into the top stories of this week. But to begin today, like most professions, women are making greater inroads than ever before. And on today's podcast, we're not just talking about inroads, but actual roads, as we look at the women drivers that make up a growing percentage of our nation's truck operators. To find out more of the special bonds they share, here's Victoria with today's guest. Victoria?
Thank you, Dave. Our guest today is Anne-Marie Michelle, a photographer and creator of the book Sisters of the Road, which depicts the lives and work of American women truck drivers. Welcome, Anne-Marie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, well, we're glad you're here. So tell us about Sisters of the Road. Can you briefly describe the book and tell us why you embarked on the project?
Sure. So the book is a photo book. It has portraits of 40 American women truck drivers. Their stories sit alongside them, and it also has all the landscapes they travel through. I actually started this project just as a personal passion project, just following my curiosity. These were pictures just for me, and it kind of has snowballed into this much bigger community of women who share the project with me. It's very much collaborative.
So how has the project evolved into a larger movement?
As I said, it started as just a smaller project. And once I actually met these women, I'd never met a woman truck driver or a truck driver at all before I actually started this project. And when I actually met these women and heard their stories, I knew that it was, well, one, they were all incredible people. And two, that their stories needed to be heard. So they very much took ownership of this project with me. It's 50% mine, 50% theirs. I took the picture, but it's very much them. And so it's a process of getting their voices heard. What do they want the world to hear? And we've used this platform, photography and art has this platform where you have many eyes and ears and an audience there. So it's kind of turned into this community and force to get their voices heard and hopefully make change where they see fit.
How did you connect with them? How did you find them? I didn't realize you didn't know any women truck drivers before this.
Right. So women only make up 7% of the workforce and truck drivers. So I didn't realize at the time, but they're actually really hard to find. So I started off by sitting in a truck stop in Orlando for 3 days. I live in London. I flew to Orlando and I sat at a truck stop for 3 days. No one came in. Of course, lots of men truck drivers came in, but no women. So on the third day, I was out of my car questioning my life choices, where I saw a woman truck driver leave the truck stop, go into the parking lot, get in her truck. So I leapt up and ran over there, waving my arms around and trying to get her to stop and talk to me. And of course, she drove right by me, the crazy woman in the parking lot, waving her arms around. So then I had to change tack really quick. And I just talked to everyone I knew to see if anyone had even heard of a female truck driver. And I eventually, through my sister's high school friend's neighbor who had a company who knew one in Ohio, and I drove there, and that was my first one. From there, I kind of gained more trust, and they knew what I was doing. I had true intentions, and it was more word of mouth and then social media, and kind of gradually seeped out that way. And that's how I found them.
Wow, that's really interesting. So to honor Women's History Month, you took the project on the road with a cross-country tour that celebrates the many women drivers that you eventually met and photographed. I believe it began March 1st and ended this week. Can you tell us about the scope of the tour and how it went and what kind of reaction you got?
Yeah, so it's been an incredible month. As you said, it's for Women's History Month. These women are a really important part of American history, women's history. We started off in San Francisco at the Red Oak Victory, which is a big ship that was primarily built by women. This is where Rosie the Riveter, we take inspiration from that. We have these yellow bandanas. And so we started there with a big launch for that for Women's History Month. And then we came down to Houston, Photo Fest, which was quite a long drive. It was so great to come down with Debbie Desiderato, Debbie Dingo, who's driving the truck the whole time. So we came down to Houston Photo Fest. So that's a big international arts and photography festival. Then we went to Arkansas at Little Rock. We had a celebration for Miss Idella Hansen there, who's an amazing truck driver, is kind of the icon of the series, but also obviously a famous name in trucking and has been driving for 55 years. And now we're at the Mid-America Truck Show, which is the grand finale of this whole trip, where lots of the women truckers are, but it's also a very central point, an important part of the trucking industry.
And so you have a display of the book, of the picture, of the photos.
We have a gallery on, like, mounted on a semi truck, so it's built into the trailer of a truck trailer. And it's pulled by one of the trucker women, Debbie Desiderato. So within that within the trailer, we have a gallery, which is has 8 large portraits of the women, video and music. It's a very immersive experience. And also the book is there for to be viewed as well. It's the gallery itself, when we took it to Photo Fest, they were saying the curators and gallerists and people who were looking were just amazed by the quality of the gallery that was actually managed to be built into it. So it very much has a gallery feel to it.
So what has been, other than that, what are some other reactions that you've received? I've never been in a gallery in a truck before. So
No, me neither. This is a first for most people, I think. Yeah. But it's been fascinating because we have split the journey between the arts world and the trucking world. It's very much an emerging of these two worlds, which you don't normally have in the same sentence. Mm-hmm. So, and from the arts and gallery perspective, it was obviously the images and seeing the art form and the way it's been displayed all across Europe and Australia, and it's been around the world already. So it's interesting to have that arts perspective where we actually had some of the women present so they could have this cross conversation there. But then bringing it to mats has been really great as well, because it's obviously a trucking audience, mm-hmm. and this is their own world. And so this is a really important stop. And I mean, even just yesterday, we're still here, we still have 2 more days to go. But yesterday with some of the truckers coming through, and obviously they know the world these women move in. They know how hard the life is, and just kind of in awe of the women, what they do in their lives. I mean, Brooke in particular, she hauls steel coils on flatbed. And lots of, even the male truckers that come in are just like, wow, she is an amazing woman. So that's really nice to hear from the trucking industry as well.
Now, the tour was in, or is in, partnership with Uber Freight. There may be other partners as well. What's their role, and how does that play out?
Yeah, so Uber Freight is our main sponsor. They're the people who actually put the power in the wheels and under the gallery. They are also like just a great partner, perfectly aligned, because we both want to elevate and celebrate these women in the trucking industry.
What's next for you? Any plans for further projects in trucking or logistics?
Oh, I don't know. It's been amazing. I come from such a different world. I was a fashion and celebrity photographer in London. So this is my first foray into trucking and logistics. But I definitely, nothing set in stone yet, but I have my eyes on other bits and pieces, maybe. Perhaps even trains. I like freight trains in America. Maybe that might be something next. Who knows?
Is there anything else about this project or about women in trucking in general that you'd like to share with our audience? Anything else from this experience that's really resonated with you?
I think, well, coming from a place of never actually of meeting a trucker woman or a trucker, but beforehand, I suppose what inspirational people they are, what hard jobs they have, how resilient they are, just really incredible that I feel like these are the people that not just women, but we should all be aspiring to. These are the character traits that we should definitely look up to. And yeah, so check them out, pay more attention, and they're getting more space in the industry. Those percentages are going up. Keep the eyes on them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Anne-Marie, thanks very much for being our guest today. We're so glad you joined us.
Thanks so much for having me.
We have been talking with Anne-Marie Michel about her Sisters of the Road project celebrating women in trucking. Back to you, Dave.
Thank you, Anne-Marie and Victoria. Now let's take a look at some of the other supply chain news from the week. And Ben, you've been looking at some recent reports to say the COVID building boom of warehouse space might be finally over. Can you share the details?
Yeah, I'm glad to, Dave. This had to do with yet another of those lasting pandemic impacts. Of course, during pandemic, one of the major trends we saw was a big boom in e-commerce. Of course, many people were living and working from home, ordering more on their computers, online. At the same time, there were also disruptions to supply chains. So over COVID outbreaks, of course, there were public health measures, there were port closures, all kinds of stuff. So many retailers had stocked up goods wherever they could, and they needed extra space to store it all. And in response largely to that, there was a huge boom in construction of industrial real estate. That's a category that includes warehouse and distribution centers, as well as manufacturing and flex spaces and office services. And this week we heard that construction boom is finally cooling off. This comes from a report from Cushman and Wakefield, the industrial real estate firm. And they found that construction starts in the industrial sector have slowed dramatically this year for two reasons. One, tenant demand has waned. And number two, there are hurdles to new construction that have been expanding. The latest numbers come from Cushman & Wakefield's report on the first quarter of 2024. That's the quarter we're just finishing off. And they show that economic uncertainty has persisted. They cited elevated inflation, high interest rates, and occupier demand has moderated. In fact, demand has moderated so much that 52% of the newly built facilities from 2023 are still available for lease. And that's causing vacancy rates to increase nationwide. That actually will probably come as some relief to warehouse and DC operators, since that vacancy rate has been, space has been very hard to find in the area. That's vacancy has been in the low single digits for several quarters now.
Well, Ben, that sounds like a very quick reversal. Did the report have any predictions for the future? When will things get better?
Well, first, it really does look like a quick reversal. A graph of this construction boom, sort of to paint it in the listener's ears, it shows a really sharp peak. And that started in the beginning of 2021. And it shot straight up to a peak that sort of hit the top by the end of 2022. In terms of how fast construction was happening. And since then, it has dropped back down just as sharply. In fact, Jason Price, he's a Cushman & Wakefield researcher who wrote the report, he said, in a quote, he said, after a pandemic-infused, overstimulated economy pushed consumer demand for durable goods to record levels in 2021 and 2022, industrial facilities were constructed at a feverish pace to meet occupier demand. So you can tell by his words just what the pace of this building boom was about. But he said that the amount of industrial real estate built since the beginning of 2020 was actually more than was constructed over the previous decade. So in other words, more was built in these past 4 years than the previous 10. Looking forward, he said, their forecast from Cushman & Wakefield is that the under construction pipeline will probably keep shrinking throughout 2024. They didn't look any farther out ahead than that, but it looks like there's plenty of space out there now as retailers and logistics operators start to position themselves for a more normal or at least more predictable pattern of inventory storage.
Right. I guess that makes sense because we knew that those huge levels of growth during the peak pandemic years were really not sustainable. So it's just now returning to more normal kind of conditions.
That's exactly right. Yep. Normal and predictable sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah. And that's probably better for all of us. Thanks, Ben.
Glad to.
And Victoria, we know that due to climate change, we have to eventually wean ourselves off of fossil fuels to power the nation's transportation fleets. But according to a story you just wrote, there are lots of hurdles to jump and a huge cost to embracing our electrical future. Can you tell us more?
Yes, Dave, absolutely. Happy to. So it seems it's going to take some pretty heavy investments to get the commercial truck market ready to be an EV-powered industry. And that's according to a recent report published by the Clean Freight Coalition. This is a trucking industry group that was formed last year, and much of its work focuses on state and federal mandates that are aimed at tightening emissions reductions and getting more electric-powered vehicles on the road, including delivery vehicles and freight trucks. Just to give you a bit of background, the Clean Freight Coalition is an alliance of trucking companies, various shapes and sizes, truck stop operators, bus companies, and the like. And they're all committed to a clean energy future for trucking. So it's something that they support. But many of those companies and others across the trucking industry say that the mandates coming out of Washington, D.C. and some states are just too much too fast. And they say there are a lot of hurdles, as you mentioned, to implementing EVs and trucking, and that those hurdles aren't being addressed by policymakers as some of these mandates, take shape. As one example, last spring, the EPA came out with a proposal to tighten emission standards for all classes of vehicles beginning with 2027 models, and that would accelerate this transition to EVs. But there was a lot of pushback on that from the commercial vehicle industry, with leaders there saying that the technology and the infrastructure simply won't be ready in time. So back to the report, which was released this past Tuesday, it estimates that it will take nearly $1 trillion, that's trillion with a T, in infrastructure of investments alone to electrify the U.S. commercial truck fleet.
Well, that's a pretty huge cost. How did they arrive at that, and who's going to pay for it?
Well, the $1 trillion figure is an estimate of what it would cost the commercial vehicle industry as well as utility companies to support electrified fleets. And it's based on modeling of fleets in existence today compared to how they'd function utilizing the newer technology, essentially. And the report came with three, I think, pretty primary takeaways. The first thing, they said that preparing today's commercial vehicle fleet for electrification would require the commercial vehicle industry to invest upwards of $620 billion in charging infrastructure alone. And that includes chargers, site infrastructure, and electric service upgrades. Utilities would need to invest, they say, about $370 billion to upgrade their grid networks to meet the demands of just commercial vehicles. So that's not including all those passenger vehicles out there. And lastly, this $1 trillion investment does not account for the cost of new battery electric trucks, which of course have to be purchased to make this a reality. And those can be 2 to 3 times more expensive than their diesel powered equivalents, according to the report. They gave an example. They said a diesel Class 8 truck costs roughly $180,000, and a comparable battery electric truck costs more than $400,000. Today, anyway. So the CFC also said in the report, though, that there are fewer barriers to entry for medium duty vehicles. Those are the delivery vans and box trucks you see out there, usually last mile type of vehicles. And that's a really good thing. And they made the larger point that the state and federal mandates should or really need to take into account where it makes the most sense for the commercial vehicle industry to adopt EVs and to really just start there and give more time to make the improvements needed to apply this technology to those larger vehicles.
Yeah, that seems to make a lot of sense. And we certainly cannot flip the switch overnight. I think it really is going to have to take a common sense approach to make that transition to electrical vehicles.
Agreed. It seems that way. Yes.
Thanks, Victoria.
You're welcome.
We encourage listeners to go to dcvelocity.com for more on these and other supply chain stories. And also check out the podcast notes section for some direct links to read more about the topics that we discussed today. And we'd like to thank Anne-Marie Michel of Sisters on the Road for being our guest. We welcome your comments on this topic and our other stories. You can email us at podcast@agilebme.com. We also encourage you to subscribe to Logistics Matters at your favorite podcast platform. Our new episodes are uploaded on Fridays. And a reminder that Logistics Matters is sponsored by Aptian. Forged from decades of industry experience, Aptian Proof of Delivery supports global delivery fulfillment operations with the tools they need to increase efficiency, gain real-time visibility, automate communications, and enhance the delivery experience for customers. Your delivery operation can be a powerful vehicle to deliver game-changing customer service, reduce costs, and drive growth. Aptian Proof of Delivery can help. Visit aptian.com and discover how now. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Logistics Matters. Be sure to join us. Until then, have a great week.